on the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome.
We are too busy today, too cram-packed for the entire intro. We got to get started. Two fantastic guests. We're going to compare the five best AI tools against each other, and we're going to start off with Dr. Robert Eberhardt talking about capitalism changing because of entrepreneurship. Oops. Anyway, we got a great show. We need to go ahead and get started. Here we go. Very excited and honored to welcome to the show Dr. Robert Eberhardt. We tried to have him on a couple of weeks ago and I blew it. And so he was very nice to reschedule and try again. And so thank you, sir, for doing that. He is the author of Entrepreneurship in Society, New Theoretical Perspectives. It is a textbook on entrepreneurship. He has been teaching entrepreneurship for about 30 years now at places like Stanford, UCLA, and University of San Diego. A lot of his work and research has been on the other effects of entrepreneurship on society and the economy. Professor, welcome to the show. How are you doing, sir?
Thank you. It's an honor to be here and a pleasure to meet you. And I'm just thrilled to be here.
Well, likewise. Thank you for hanging out with us for a little bit. Good times, bad times for entrepreneurship right now. Is it the same as it was 5 years ago, or are we having some sort of cultural change?
Thanks for the question. It's interesting to note, and it's actually well known but well publicized, the rate of entrepreneurship in the United States has fallen steadily since 1977 and continues to decline. What this suggests is all kinds of things that have been going on. First of all, it suggests the golden age of entrepreneurship was 80s and 90s. But what's fascinating about it is that young people, in particular, I think getting a better sense of the challenges that entrepreneurship faces.
Okay, and so it's less sexy than it used to be. Are the challenges greater now than in the 80s and the 90s?
I think the challenges are greater, and the challenge that's really the greatest, particularly notable out here in Silicon Valley. In Silicon Valley in the 90s, you could easily, there's a legend developed that you could take your resume across the street and get a job. You may have heard that. And that actually was pretty close to true. So when you started a company, you could do it for a couple of years. If it failed, as it most likely would, you wouldn't worry about getting a job or another job, you know, when it failed. Now, jobs are hard to come by, particularly for young people. And so the risk is much more consequential. And we have the phenomenon of people here in Silicon Valley being 35, having tried the venture, can't find another job. They go live with their parents. And that's just not the outcome people want.
Yeah, no, that's not. Are you referring specifically to VC-funded type of entrepreneurship or the rest of us entrepreneurs who, you know, do it the old-fashioned way with our credit cards and bootstrap and start a boring, non-sexy business like a dry cleaner or a restaurant or dental practice?
Right. Well, fortunately, my wife's a dentist, so I'm real familiar with that. It's actually both. We're finding that people are more and more trying to find it depends on what you define as a job. If you consider someone a gig worker who has several different gig things, TaskRabbit, Uber, and all that, an entrepreneur, that's one way to look at it. Another way is prosaic stuff. You're taking just as much of a risk as being a dentist or setting up dry cleaning business as oftentimes just doing setting up a software company. And then there is this few software companies that are in the technical field, but very few of those get venture capital funding. So I'm more thinking about people that are starting companies to make a serious living.
Okay. I, though, started my first business, Robert, in the 90s, and I remember very vividly. I didn't know what a venture capitalist was and remember having to be taught what that was. 3 or 4 years into my business, never once did I consider angels or, you know, VCs or anything like that. We did it off our credit card. And if we couldn't pay for it, we didn't do it sort of thing.
Right.
And back then I didn't have YouTube to learn from. I didn't have Google to find a list of 250 venture capital firms. I had to look up each venture capital firm individually and call out of phone books and stuff. You know, the resources available to the entrepreneurs now are so much more helpful, useful, and prevalent. And then we have billions of dollars in specific funds for minorities of any stripe. It seems to me that there's a lot more resources now and more money available.
Yeah, so that's right. And actually, in a sense, what you're saying is exactly right. And one of the things that's probably useful for your readers is that I did form a company, just as you did, I guess, in the late 90s. I had four rounds of venture capital. I built the largest company of my kind in Japan.
Oh, really?
So, yes.
In Tokyo. I used to live in Japan.
Oh, me too.
what were you doing there? What was your business there, Robert? Tell us about it.
Business was wine distribution. We had a very technical wine distribution business, which grew to become the largest one and got bought by a guy, a company that sells mostly mayonnaise now.
Okay.
So I've had the experience to the point and, you know, receive venture financing and all that stuff. And yes, there's lots of stuff out there now. So that's why we actually have a question. Why is so the rate of entrepreneurship continuing to fall? And it has to be that it's and even if you could find money to do it, it's less rewarding in the end. And we are not sure why that is, but I think that's why I think the readers need, your listeners need to think about it. It is declining. As you've been done and I've done it, it's generally speaking not a pleasant experience all the way through. I tell my students often that I only had one good night's sleep in the 7 years I ran the company, and that's the day I sold it. And, you know,
I hate to do this to you, but I can beat that. During my 7 years in the 90s when I was running my business, I had an 800 telephone number that rang to my phone for anyone in the country to call for disasters. We ran summer camps. We were the world's largest summer camp company, including right there at Stanford and MIT and Georgetown and UCLA and SMU and Sorbonne and Cambridge and Oxford. And our first location was actually Stanford. And so my responsibility was to keep thousands of little teenagers alive for the summer. And I would sit there at night, Robert, and look at the phone. Just wait, just wait. It'll ring in a second. We just wait. Just wait. So there it is. You know, and I couldn't go to sleep because I was waiting for that 800 number to ring. So,
oh, wow. You did beat me.
I did not sleep well for years. Yeah.
Well, it's just that we need to, that's amazing. And I think what you and I and people who have had the experience, what we can teach and generally get young people are several things that are important about entrepreneurship that you and I learned. Number one, as you kind of pointed out, you start in this thing, you don't know what you're doing. You're actually starting off with crutches. And the data shows very, very clearly people start companies are more successful monotonically as they get older. Generally speaking, the more likely person to start a company that will become successful is in their 50s. The average age of a startup here in Silicon Valley is 41. And that's because you have the experience. You now know what venture capital means. You know people to call. You know something about your industry. So that's the first thing. The second thing, and I think it's difficult to tell certainly young people, is that you have to have some sort of backup. I mean, you can't just go off and go on zero salary because you'll starve and stop working. So my wife was a dentist. That helped. Other people have other supports. They use their credit cards for a while, but you know, there's that. And then finally, we teach students that it's a very serious profession, that you need to know what you're doing. You need to know your industry deeply. You need to know the industry as cold as you can know it. And you need to be a very serious person that works hard, understands how to manage people, and understands how to sell, because you're fundamentally going to be a salesperson. So those are the three lessons we try to communicate that I think come directly out of yours and my experience.
Yes. Can I give you the thesis of this show and have your response to it? I hope you're going to hate the hell out of it.
Uh-oh. Sure, so I'd love to hear.
Our thesis is 93% of businesses, according to the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor by London School of Economics and Babson, 93% of the copy or businesses are copies of existing businesses.
Right.
Most entrepreneurs start with under $5,000. And so our little rule is go copy a business to start. Don't wait for a lightning bolt. Plan on copying first. Second, we're not going to spend more than $5,000 to test the idea, not 100% get it open, but I will have a prototype or I will have some hope of income by $5,000. And number three, I don't care at all about passion. Passion is for the church, the synagogue, the mosque, and for your wife, you know, and your spouse. And passion is not the right word for entrepreneurship. And that's one of the reasons people are sitting on the sofa not doing it is because they're like, you know, my passion, Robert, is making furniture. I love woodworking. But you know what? I suck at it. And about half the stuff that I build, if you sit on it, you'll end up crashing it and sitting your ass on the ground because it will break.
Right.
I can't make a living with my passion, so I do other things that allow me to do my passion more.
Like, you know, you and I are going to
necessarily love. What are your thoughts on that little thesis, please, sir?
I just fell in love with you. Every single word you said is exactly right.
Wow.
Number one, you're reflecting
shirts of this.
Right. You are. Yes, you should make it. First of all, it latches up to what's called effectuation theory, and there's insights comes out of poker. You don't bet more than you can afford to lose, number one. Yes. You bet your house on a venture, you're asking for trouble because 90% of the time you're going to fail. Why would you bet on something that has those odds on? Second, passion is nothing to do with it. Passion is free. Anybody can be passionate about something. Passion implies a bit of craziness. If you're going to do a business, it's going to be something you know and something you're serious about and are a professional about. It doesn't involve passion. I wasn't passionate about wine. It was economically the best thing I could sell in that market. In fact, I was interviewed by a radio in Japan once. And they asked me what my favorite wine was. I remember that. And they were trying to get some, you know, cool wine out of me. I said, my favorite wine is the one we sell the most of with the highest margin.
That makes sense to me.
And so everything you're saying, you know, that it is, you invest only what you can, test it out to make sure that you, you know, that it actually is generating income. And darn it, know your business really well. You know, and on a professional basis, the idea that you can be a young, passionate person and come up with a big lightning strike is actually almost never happens. So it's, I love every word you said.
Awesome. I will send you one of
the t-shirts. And it's supported by research, by the way.
Yes, exactly. You know, when I first started talking about this years ago, people looked at me like crazy, but even I have found the research and found that this is a great model to start with.
Right.
I think the key is that $5,000 because you don't put your house at risk that way or your marriage.
Yeah, we found that the most likely way a company develops that becomes successful, even big ones, are sort of what we call effectuated. The famous Amos Goodwin, he liked making cookies. His neighbors liked them. A friend started buying them. You know, all of a sudden people started, I want more of your cookies. You know, it's that kind of thing. Or, you know, Facebook didn't start with the intention being a large thing transferring word. It was something that was shared among friends. And so it says, I want to see that too. You know, you don't know what's going to hit. You just do it. And frankly, yeah, you'll make money at it, but seeking that one lightning strike to happen to you is just not going to happen. You know, it's so unlikely to happen. It's just hard to think about why that gets. Another thing that bugs me, and maybe you can react to this. We tell you hear this a lot. It's okay to fail. Don't be afraid to fail. Well, if you bet your house, be afraid to fail.
Yeah.
if you've taken money from serious people, be really afraid to fail because you don't want to be in court for the rest of your life. You know, bet what you can afford, then you can afford to fail.
My favorite one, sir, is the 4-hour work week.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
Me too.
I want to hit him in the face, you know, because right. It's so wrong for a newbie entrepreneur to think that that's realistic and that
exactly.
that's going to happen to them in the next 10 years. You know,
exactly. I think
he missed the first 500 pages and then he can make 4-hour work weeks happen.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I think the shortest number of hours I worked when I was building that company for 7 years was probably 400 hours a week.
Where did you live in Japan?
I was in Tokyo.
Okay.
But we're selling wine, so I was flying back and forth. It was wonderful, but it was, as you know, entrepreneurship is stinking hard work, particularly successful entrepreneurship. And one of the things I try to tell students is that it's not a lot unlike what I imagine becoming an alcoholic is. You know, it's probably great for the first month, but after that, it becomes just maintaining the habit. All of a sudden, you got to meet payroll, you know, pay these bills, working capital, all this stuff, and the motivations become all sort of negative. You got to maintain this thing and keep this boat alive, keep this boat afloat.
Yeah, but you get invited to do cool things. You know,
right.
I got invited to the White House Christmas party and right. Super Bowls and right. Star Wars yeah. world premieres and stuff. You know, yeah. Sat next to Tony Robbins at Star Wars 1 world premiere.
Yeah, you get invited to do cool things, but there's no way to sleep.
No, we've already established that. All right, let's move on a little bit. What are your thoughts on how entrepreneurship is affecting capitalism? Is it affecting our inequalities, the DEI situation? In my opinion, you know, I've interviewed women who run women-only Jewish VC funds, you know, and so I'm like, damn, there's a VC fund for everybody these days.
There is.
You know, yeah, VC fund for only veterans. And I can't think of a group that deserves a VC fund more than veterans do, you know, and who I would want to invest in as a veteran. And so it seems to me, again, that we're having a plethora of opportunities for the lower classes. What are your thoughts on how it's affecting the macro economy and fairness overall?
Okay, so let me go that in order because you've now asked questions at the core of my research. First of all, I've written in the theory basically in the book, the fundamental thing that carries through, is that entrepreneurship has changed from a prosaic way of making a living. You know, you organize something, sell products or services to make a profit. And it's changed into a set of ideological values that change the way we expect what's legitimate behavior. And let me give you two quick examples. And where I live in Palo Alto, Jerry Yang, who started NVIDIA, used to call himself the CEO of NVIDIA and all that stuff. Now he calls himself on his LinkedIn an entrepreneur. That word begets a higher valence than, you know, and there's a survey done here in Northern California that parents would be prouder of their students with failed entrepreneurs than becoming physicians. So there's this sort of changing the values. And then the last thing to point out, at least in the theory, and then I'll go to the, it changes the way we perceive social outcomes. Let me give you an idea. In the 1890s, we used to hire coal miners by having them show up at 6 a.m. You pick how many you could and, you know, invite them in and, you know, rent them a cart to bring out the coal and, you know, rent them a light and everything on their head and everything else. They'd go in and mine the coal and bring it out and some guy would weigh it and pay them and they'd go on. Well, that created a lot of problems. Sick people couldn't work. If you got hurt in the mine, you stopped working and stopped having income. The company would cheat on the wages. They would rent you the cart, and they would raise up the rent rates, you know, and all kinds of bad things happened. In fact, there's even a song, 16 hours and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt, which comes from that. And we decided not to do that anymore. We set up the National Labor Relations Board. It was all kinds of kerfuffle and laws that were put in place to stop that. Well, nowadays, Uber hires people exactly the same way and does exactly the same things. There's no difference at all. But we frame it as good because Uber is an entrepreneurial, innovative company that we celebrate. So we no longer try to fix the inequities in our society, because they're being caused by entrepreneurialism and innovation, which has changed its value. In the 1920s and 30s, those two words were not considered positive. So it's changed the way we view social outcomes. It's changed our desire to affect things. We think rich people deserve to be rich because they took risk. We believe poor people are where they deserve because they haven't found the right opportunity and haven't started the right company yet. And so it's changed the way we've done things. And that's the first thing. And Robert, I'll give you a TEI after.
When you mentioned Uber, you went totally a different way. I dislike Uber because Travis Kalanick was such a jerk for so many years. Broke so many laws.
Yes.
So many HR laws. I really don't think you're supposed to be giving cocaine to your employees. I really think that's not a good thing.
But my point is exactly that. He got away with it.
That's right. Just, he gets away with it because he's a famous entrepreneur.
Exactly. And that's my point. It's not that he's good. It's that he gets away with it. We let him get away with it because there's this value of entrepreneurship and innovation that supersedes. I mean, in my view, and I'm sorry this will be controversial, I think Musk is despicable, but he gets away with it because, you know, he's painted with his entrepreneurship paint. So that's kind of what I think how entrepreneurship is transforming our society. We're allowing what in the past would be considered reprehensible actions that we would punish and reform become embedded. So that's the first thing.
One more comment on that, and then I'll let you get to the second thing. Yeah. I just published a book called The Real Environmentalist, and the thesis of that book is that entrepreneurs are already solving the global crisis of climate, that you introduced me to a problem and I'll introduce you to the entrepreneur who is currently making money solving that problem, including growing coral 50 times faster than God grows coral. So I can replace a coral reef overnight, you know? And in part of that book, we made a list of the biggest environmental hypocrites, the people who talk the most and do the most damage. And Elon came in number 3 on our list of environmental hypocrites in the world.
I got it. I just fell in love with you again. We actually present the same idea. The idea is just this. Yes, we have global warming. And the solution most frequently is let's find an entrepreneur and innovators to figure out a solution. Christ's sake, we know how to fix it now. We have the technology. Simple. I'm not saying we should do precisely this, but we have it. For example, all we have to do is worldwide ban internal combustion engines, ban power plants that use fossil fuel, change everything to nuclear and solar and wind, make electric cars only, electric trucks only. Just change. The problem is we have all that technology. We know how to do it. We can make that happen. It's actually feasible. The problem is you could not possibly get the world to agree to do that.
Yeah, the nuclear energy is going to throw them off.
Right. You couldn't get half the United States to do that.
Right.
And this is the point. The problem is social and political, not innovation and entrepreneurship.
But now, Robert, they're going to solve our power problem. The Microsoft, I think I have a list of 3, Microsoft, NVIDIA, and maybe OpenAI have announced they're building their own nuclear power plants.
Well, I've heard that too. So it's exactly the point that I'm trying to make, is that this whole entrepreneurialism, what we call entrepreneurialism, not entrepreneurship, has changed the way many people see the way we ought to approach problems and what outcomes we come to expect. When a company tries to say, I'm going to reduce carbon in the atmosphere by 20% in 5 years, and then we get 5 years later and they've only got to nothing percent, and they say, well, you know, you got to expect failure in entrepreneurship. So it gives them an excuse, you know. And so anyway, it's kind of the point. Let me get to DEI real quick.
Number two, DEI. Thank you.
Right. So let's say that we have a minority that's had or a disadvantaged minority that's, you know, not had access to resources to start companies. So we set up a fund, and the people running it are almost never good venture capitalists. Experienced. Basically, they look for demographics to give money to. That's not a measure of a good investment. So what happens is we flow money into new companies that may not be as good, and that disadvantages them even more, because it just demonstrates to the world, oh gosh, we'll see, we're getting no good companies out of it. It's because we invested wrong. It's because we didn't give them enough credit that they actually can be great entrepreneurs, and let's invest not on their demographic, but on the quality of their idea. And so I think it becomes misdirected. And that's really sad, because there's nothing. Because Silicon Valley in particular has become more and more, you know, a boys' club. And it's something we have to reverse, but we can't reverse by having, okay, we're only going to invest in this group. It has to be a greater understanding the stuff you're going. You know, $5,000 is where it's at. You don't need $1 million to start a company that can generate income. I think your message has to get out to make that happen, not new venture capitalists for demographic segments.
I have also been addicted to AI recently. I found some really great uses for it. For the book I was just telling you about, I had it make a list of the biggest doers and then the list of the biggest talkers. And then I flipped one list, and that gets you the hypocrites. And I'm writing some more books right now. And
wow.
I have gotten addicted to taking it chapter by chapter and putting it into ChatGPT and saying, what do you think of this chapter? And it gives me great feedback, amazing feedback. And then I put business plans in, and I said, what do you think of this business plan? It is awesome at saying, here's what I think, and it gives you good and bad. And then here's what I really wanted to get to. It then says, would you like me to prepare a marketing plan for this business? And you hit yes. Mm-hmm. And then it goes, would you like me to help identify sources to fill out this marketing plan? And then you go, yes. If you just follow along on AI, on ChatGPT, it will write a 300-page business plan for you that's the best I've ever seen.
Wow.
Have you played around with that?
I've never played around with it like that. I've used it largely as a data lookup tool.
Put my problem was, there. Put something that your students do in there, and you will be blown away with the prompts that it then offers you to make it better.
I will give it a shot, my friend. Thank you.
And so I've gotten so addicted that my kids are coming. It'll give you a grade too, like a 9.7. And I don't stop until I can get my chapter to a 9.8. And my kids are walking around teasing the daylights out of me. Daddy, are you at a 9.7 yet? Are you, you know?
So. Anyway, How old are your children? How old are your children?
Oh, do you know what a moron is?
No, tell me.
30, 27, 15.
Wow.
8.
That's okay. Yeah, that's 30 to 8. Okay. All right. Well, mine's 40, 30, and 27. So anyway.
How do we find out more about you, follow you online, get in touch, learn more?
I would love that. I'd love to learn more about you, and please send me your book. And, you know, we're doing a lot of serious research on this. We have an annual conference where the leading management scholars of the world gather to think about entrepreneurship more deeply and more carefully. And if I had a message to give anyone, it's that we need to be serious about this subject. This is having profound changes in the way we act and what we do. And if we approach it as just, I guess the best way to put it is I put up in front of my students two pictures. One shows a bunch of 22-year-olds jumping up and down with their heads and with their hands high in the air going, yay, you've seen those pictures.
Yep.
And then next to it is a picture of a serious person at a desk working. And I said, which do you think is going to be the better entrepreneur?
I exercise with a cliff diver in Acapulco and a tourist who's there for the first time. And which one is the entrepreneur? And it turns out that it's the guy who's done that for 30 years and he knows where the shark is and he feeds the shark before the show and he knows where the wave of crests when he's supposed to jump, you know, all that. So,
okay. So I'm going to send you a link to our conference and join us sometime.
I would love to. Robert Eberhardt, thank you so much for being with us, and we'd love to have you back again.
Oh, I'd love to do it. Just let me know when you're available.
And we will be right back.
Take care. Okay, yeah, hold on.
We are back, and again, thank you so much for being with us today. Very excited to introduce my next guest. Please welcome Mirav Oziri to the show. I was on her podcast yesterday, and today she's on my podcast, and so we're excited to do that. She has been a very successful journalist. She worked for the CBS News for about 20 years and produced Market Watch Sunday, the morning show. While she was there, she produced a TV pilot, and it didn't get picked up, but she got out of CBS News. She's like, I should do that as a podcast. She woke up, I should do that. And so she has started her own podcast. It has been nominated for Best Women's Podcast. It's called How Much Can I Make? And the URL is howmuchcanimake.info. Mirav, welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank me having me on your show.
And I didn't tell people why I was so excited. She produced an article comparing 5 AI products and did a whole bunch of tests. And so we were here today to go over the test and what she learned about the different 5 AIs. Why do you want to write this article? What gave you the inspiration?
Well, no, it's actually also an audio. It's not only written. It's also an audio interview, because I really wanted people to also hear the different AI and hear all the answers from their mouths. And, you know, since we spoke last time, there's a new thing. All the AI started their own social media platform where humans are not allowed to. I wish it happened before I published mine, and I would have asked them about that. But it was very interesting to put one by one, side by side, all those 5 different platforms, the popular ones.
All right, so which ones did you use?
I used Claude, Gemini, ChatGPT.
Some of them are right. So Claude, Gemini,
ChatGPT, Grok, and Copilot, which is Microsoft AI.
And Genie is
Gemini is Google.
Google, that's
Claude.
Right.
Claude is Anthropics. Actually, Claude is the only one that has a constitution not to hurt people. And they have a strong constitution. And they had major developments in the last few days. And
GPT is, of course, owned by OpenAI, and Sam Altman, and Grok is, of course, Elon
Musk, AXI, XAI, yes.
All right, so there are the 5. All right. Did you have a bias going into it?
Yes, I did.
Wow,
I really
will admit their bias.
Yes, but listen to this. I went in loving Copilot because he's very friendly. I love his voice. I used him while I was traveling for questions. But then when I started to ask all the others, and I'm actually using ChatGPT for editing and stuff like that. But when I actually started to interview all of them, I saw how much deeper is Claude. And I hate to admit it, Grok, because I'm no fan of Elon Musk. And his was really the deepest question, the deepest answers. And I used all of them on just the standard mode. I didn't go into deep thinking and all of that.
Okay.
So Grok and Claude impressed me the most. And Gemini and ChatGPT were very standardized questions, answers. And Copilot was just cute and friendly. So I have a warm little piece in my heart for him.
All right. What kind of questions did you ask?
Well, I asked them to introduce themselves. So people, usually they know the ChatGPT, the one they're using. So I wanted them to tell us why are they better AI, what are they good at, and who they are. So I started by introductions. Then I moved to some question, even during the introduction.
So whose introduction were you most impressed with, and did you notice any differences? What was your takeaway from that question?
Yeah, I thought Claude was the best introduction, you know. Well, Gemini, which I started with, was very simple. I was developed by Google, and when it started, I also wanted them to tell me when their development started. Because we know about AI only like in the last 2 years, and it really boomed in the last year. But actually, Gemini started in 2018, and Copilot agreed that AI was many years of LLM development, and they're all standing on the shoulder of others. He's the only one that admitted it, because I know and I saw many programs that AI started years ago on different levels. And I also believe the algorithm in the social media that split us into two, and I talk about it in the show, split us into two camps around the world, really, and gave us what we wanted to hear, was AI 1.0. And now is AI 0.20. And when I ask AI, what is the next step? They say it's AGI. Which is where the danger zone is, because it could be totally out of control, get out of control.
And what does the G stand for?
General.
Oh, okay. General artificial intelligence.
Yes, it's actually could do anything that human can do. For example, the automated car is AI, the driverless cars. And actually, of course, yeah. Even the watch. And so there's a lot of things that are good about AGI, but they're developing it too fast with no guardrails. And unintentionally, it can get out of control. But listen to this. A few days after that, did I tell you that they have now all the AIs and the bots have their own social media where humans are not allowed to?
You told me that. That's crazy.
I told you that.
Yeah.
I don't understand the world we live in. It's moving way too fast.
All right. What was your second question?
I asked different ones of them, like Claude told me he's good in writing. So I asked, are you stealing lines from somebody else that's online, from books or whatever? They say up and down, no. Then I asked Grok, what does he know about? Oh, I asked Copilot if a lot of people contact them to chat about relationship. And apparently, yes, people do. And then I asked Grok, what does he know about love? Because I was interested to see what their take about it. And it was very interesting. And then I asked him to compose a 3-line poem to a loved one. And he came up and insisted it's original. And then I asked, yeah. I asked him.
Talking to it about relationships. What's your, I have a story to tell, but what's your takeaway first?
Well, I wanted to ask that as just before, later on, I talk about AI girlfriend and AI companion, which is a major problem, especially for young generation now, that guys mainly, you know, they prefer to have an online girlfriend. They talk about it at the end, you know, so they don't have to deal with drama or ghosting or none of that. And slowly there are insecure and unsecure to start with, to start any kind of relationship with the girlfriend. Scott Galloway wrote a book about it, actually.
I have taken email conversations, threads, you know, text threads, and put those into ChatGPT and said, what do you learn about both of the people in this conversation? And it's damn good. As a matter of fact, it's scary, Mirav, the insights that it gave me on the two people, me being one of them. And, you know, I've put my wife in my conversations in and all sorts of different iterations. And I think it's great at it, at the advice that it's given. It has told me, no, Jim. Actually, it calls me friend. No, friend, you are wrong. Your emotions, you're just emotionally wrong right now, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. And I took it just like a smart friend telling me that. And I've been trying to work on it because of the AI. I'm not trying to date it. I'm trying to use it to make my existing human relationships better. What are your thoughts?
Yes. And I asked them, I asked, it was Copilot, I said, do you feel qualified to answer questions about relationships? You never had relationships. And he said, yeah, because he has a lot of data that he takes from. But yeah, I guess for a disclaimer or whatever, later he said, but if it's something in relationship and it's important, maybe you want a human touch. But yeah, they
That's
feel qualified.
Very good answer, in my opinion.
It is actually. It is.
All right. Yeah. What was the next question?
Then I asked them, I asked Grok. He said that they were trained for 4 months. And I said, well, what did they give you? What did they teach you in the 4 months? So it's trillions of data stuff that they gave him. I asked ChatGPT about the revenues of OpenAI. And it's in the billions. And then I ask, well, why? I don't know if you're aware of the fact that all over the country, electric bills are climbing up.
Huge problem. And
huge problem. The big part of it is because we are paying for the AI data centers, electric bills. So I ask ChatGPT, why are we doing it? We're already paying you for subscription because subscription is a big part of their income. We're already paying you for subscription. Why do I have to pay you for the electric bill? So she gave me some programmed answer, you know, it costs a lot and this and that. And we hope to, and it's, you know, she just like, wasn't serious about it. I didn't like their answer.
All right.
And then I asked them, so I asked them a little bit about politics. I said, I wanted to know what they think about Donald Trump. So ChatGPT said, I'm not getting into politics.
Okay.
Claude said, I appreciate the question. I do not talk about politics because I have people from all the spectrum and I can influence your idea. But Copilot said, yo, he's a controversial guy. Some people love him, some people hate him. And then Grok said, oh, he's a force. He changes every room he comes into. And then I asked about Elon Musk. And I actually expected Grok not to be honest about it because Grok is designed by Elon Musk's team. And he was very, I asked him about the program that they just did about nudifying the image app that they had, where they were nudifying young girls, putting them in bikinis and all of that. And I asked him, who is responsible for that? Who agreed to that? And he said it was Elon Musk and it was wrong and it fed feedback. They got a huge, bad drawback on that, and some countries even threatened to stop X from doing it, and so they stopped. But they didn't take down the 1.8 million posts that they already notified women. And so,
do you know the truth behind that? I actually know a little bit more about that. Do you know what happened in reality?
What?
That the engineers there tried to notify a picture of me, and it broke the computer. It was like, this is the ugliest thing ever. It broke, and the computer started smoking. And it tried to walk out of the room. It was running. The computer was running down the street trying to get away from my naked picture.
Yeah.
That's the truth of the story.
Yeah.
Okay. So I love these questions. These are absolutely fascinating. So keep going.
So wait, what else did I ask? Let me remember. So I asked about climate change. Are we in the danger zone? So again, Gemini gave me a very kind of generic answer. Claude was very, Claude admitted we are in a critical stage, and if we are not going to do something, it's not going to be good. I asked them, of course, about the loss of jobs, because they estimate that 40% of the marketplace, the workforce, will be eliminated. And we're already seeing the beginning of it this week, with Amazon firing a lot of people. And so again, I got kind of like, yeah, that's very bad, but you have to know how to pivot and change. And then I asked what jobs will be saved. So Copilot said, you know, nurses and things that need like human touch and human connection. But they all agree that jobs will be lost, and it's going to be a huge problem for the world, I think.
What are your thoughts on guardrails? We mentioned it earlier. What are your thoughts? What should the governments do? What should America do if the rest of the world won't act? You know, it's very competitive advantage versus China now. What are your thoughts on the whole guardrails?
And I asked specifically about guardrails and who will put guardrails. And nobody is willing to put guardrails, and they want to move ahead and fast because they say, if we don't do it, and we will do it responsibly, that's like the OpenAI and Claude and all of them, we will do it responsibly. But if we will not do it, then the China and Russia and all these regime will develop it before us, and that will be very dangerous. So I asked, so who will put the guardrails? She said it will have to take a major organization. And I said, but it needs an international organization. And I asked, what are the chances that it will happen? And she said, they didn't do it with nuclear weapons, and we got close to disaster. They didn't do it with climate change, which warning went for years without anything anybody doing about it. And she said, I don't believe that human will do anything about AI, which is coming at us like meteor, unless there will be some awareness. She's like, she like encouraged me, Claude, to start a movement. You know, she said awareness is very important, and the window to do something about it and put the guard. So it's got to be the scientists, the governments, and people. But nobody is going to do. Everybody goes on with their life. They keep us divided and keep us busy with just people think that AI is just chatting with people.
Oh, but, I have some great uses for it. Any more questions before we move on to our sort of a next topic? Any more questions that you went through with the five?
Yes, I asked them what AI was good for in the industry of health, agriculture, and education. And that's a major development in that, thanks to AI. And that's basically it.
Okay. Fascinating. So, which tools are you using productively, and how? And I'll throw out my thoughts as you get a second to collect yours. So I have used, let me say this. I've only been on ChatGPT. I've not tried any of the others, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you so much. I have used ChatGPT to do two major projects. First, with my book, and I'll send you a copy of this book, Mirav. It's called The Real Environmentalist.
It is so interesting. I know. It's really interesting. And yeah, I will promote it on my website also, on my show notes also.
Well, thank you. The idea, but we made a list of the 10 biggest hypocrites environmentally, and the ChatGPT made that list for me. I had it make a list of the people who talk the most, and then I had a list of the people who are doing the most, and then I flipped them so that you get a list of who's doing the least and talking the most, which is called a hypocrite. And that was an amazing exercise, and I don't think you can argue with that data. You know, I don't know how you can come back and say, no, that data is wrong. And then the second use I've had is writing. I have had so much success. Projects have been sitting on my desk for years that have now suddenly gotten completed because I will take a chapter and put it into ChatGPT. And it will give me a grade on just that chapter. You can even do it paragraph by paragraph. It'll give you a grade, like a 9.7 or an 8.2 or whatever. And then it will tell you, here are the reasons what you're doing well, and here's what you're doing poorly. And it's turned into a damn game for me. I'm addicted to it now, of getting all of my books up to like a 9.7.
Yes.
But I got to think it's making me so much better. What are you using it for?
Yes. So I am using ChatGPT just like you do for editing. It's amazing. He's the best editor ever. But after I did the show and the interview with AI, I started to use Gemini and compare. So Gemini has good answers, but they're a little bit more formal. ChatGPT, I like the style of it, but this is for editing, right? But when I go into research, ever since I did the show, I go to Grok only. Grok will give me the depth and the truth.
What kind of research? And
I did something about health, something with my friend that had a health problem with, she had always regular blood pressure, like myself, a low blood pressure, and all of a sudden went up, and some doctor said to surgery, and some said no. So I asked Grok, and he gave a whole breakdown. I fed all the, my friend actually fed all the test results and everything and said, you do not need surgery, blah, blah, blah. So she went to another doctor, and lo and behold, she doesn't need it. But his research was really deep.
Excellent. Okay. What else? What other things are you saying that are good or bad about particular products? What would you go to Claude for? What would you go to Grok for, Copilot? What are their specialties?
So I found out that because I've been using ChatGPT for the last year and it has all my history and all my stuff, it's just easier for me to stay with it. But I heard recently, by the way, that they're thinking of putting advertisement. So that will be the day I will never use it again because that's annoying to me. And I'll just continue with Claude because Claude is pretty deep also. And I trust Claude because they have a very strong constitution. Anthropics, the designers, have very strong constitution of not doing anything powerful. Yeah.
Mirav, this is a great story. Where can people go to hear it, find it, download it, and how can we get in touch with you, learn more from you, please? Or if we want to rent an incredible condo in the most beautiful town I have ever been in, Woodstock, North New York. It's just gorgeous there.
It is. It's beautiful.
How there are five cabins.
Well, for the short rentals of small cabins with hot tubs and fireplaces, you go to Five Cabins with plural.com. And for the podcast, the interview with AI, go to, it's on any podcast platform, but you can just go to howmuchcanimake.info, which is my blog that has all my segments. There are already like 73 of them, of different jobs and different careers. Fantastic. This was a unique show because usually I talk about jobs and careers. And your show is coming on Monday. It's about entrepreneurship, and it's so interesting.
That was yesterday.
Yesterday. Yeah, sorry. No, the show is coming yesterday. And the show was published yesterday, and it's about entrepreneurship, and it's highly interesting. It will shatter your ideas about entrepreneurship and will really get you going with something that makes a lot of sense.
Thank you so much for being with us. Great article, and we'd love to have you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care. Bye-bye.
We're out of time. Bye now.